Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
So, Mara, as we mentioned last week, there have been some cast cuts of Days of Our Lives, and Martha Madison, who has played Belle on and off since 2004, has confirmed that she is one of them. In an interview with TVInsider.com, Martha said the writing was on the wall ever since they quashed the E.J. Belle romance. She was told it was budget dictated, but then was confused because weeks later, as she was saying her goodbyes to everyone, she randomly got another script. And in it, it indicated that Belle was staying in town, which no one had spoken to her about. But then she was told that they wanted her to hang around to do legal stuff and other things maybe, but an opportunity that she declined, and she shot her last episode in April. Bottom line, Martha said it was time to leave, and I, for one, feel she will be missed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I know I'm not alone in feeling really sad about this. You know, Belle is a legacy character, and we know how valuable the presence of legacy characters are. And at this point, Martha is a vet, you know, one who's proven that when they write for Belle, she really delivers. I think the character is one that the show has gotten quite comfortable kind of cycling in and out. And I have to imagine that the time will come that they will cycle her in again. And I have to hope that there is a scenario in which Martha would be open to returning down the line.
I mean, me too. Martha said she's open to going to another show, so I hope the window doesn't close should Days want her back. But I mean, she and Sean are such a strong representation of the next generation of Salem, and I just feel their presence should be felt on the canvas. Now, in happier days news, Suzanne Rogers is marking an incredible 50 years since she made her 1973 debut as Maggie on August 18th. The show will address the milestone in the episode that airs that day, which can be streamed on Peacock anytime. But we also have a feature with Suzanne in the new issue in which she looks back on her time on the show. Now, I've had the great pleasure of interviewing Suzanne many times and spending time with her at the studio in Burbank. And I can say without hesitation that she is just one of the most genuine, lovely women I have ever met. And a daytime winning actress to boot. So check out that interview in our new issue.
And I would add that if you haven't already listened to Suzanne's appearance on our podcast back when she was celebrating a mere 46 years as Maggie, do yourself a favor and check that out. She's a magnificent storyteller and just an absolute daytime treasure. You know, you use the word incredible to describe this milestone, and it genuinely is. I mean, there are only a handful of performers in this medium who have been on a show for that long, and really no actor in any other medium who can say that they have had this kind of consistent employment over a 50-year span, and certainly playing the same character for 50 years is something you are never going to find outside of the daytime world. So she deserves all of the congratulations and all of the love that I know that fans have for her.
Well, our guest today is no stranger to Salem. He began his daytime career there in 1995. It's Austin Peck, who has played Days' Austin Reed on and off since then, with some other soap towns visited along the way. So let's get him on the line and catch up. Hi, Austin.
Well, hello.
How you doing?
I am very well. How are you?
I am doing well, and I am excited that we are talking to you today.
Well, I am excited to be here after all these decades of knowing each other.
I know. I mean, now I know a lot about you, but the people listening might not know as much. So we're going to go back a little in time. You are a native of Honolulu, Hawaii, and lived there for the first several years of your life. So what was your childhood like there? And do you have specific memories of Hawaii?
I have absolutely no memories of Hawaii. We left when I was two. So I wish I could say that if I were to say mahalo, it would actually be authentic. Instead, I would just be doing some serious cultural appropriation. Yeah, my father was in the Navy, so that's why we're in Honolulu. We moved to California when I was four. Yeah. And then LA when I was, San Francisco, Mill Valley, where basically I think everybody in Mill Valley was all high. And it was all hippies. And then we moved to my mom was in the entertainment industry and moved to LA for her to pursue more of her acting career. And yeah, so we moved to Hollywood. When we moved to Hollywood, I thought, oh, we're going to be moving into like the Paramount Gates, like the stereotypical pictures of the Paramount Gates. Literally as an 8-year-old thought, we're going to live in there. That's where I thought. And then when I got to Hollywood, to say that I was shocked would be a gross understatement. Hollywood has always been seedy. But we lived, we walked out, we looked up and we could see the Hollywood sign out right outside. We would look up and there it was, running Canyon Drive.
That's cool.
Yeah. So when you think about yourself as a youngster living in Hollywood, can you pinpoint a time where you see this is where the actor in me was born, where that desire developed?
That's a good question. I mean, I always, as a kid, I remember very vividly thinking, I imagined myself actually doing anything. And I think that makes it hard because I could romanticize anything because of my imagination. My main thing was, I was a latchkey kid, parents divorced. So when you come home and, where's mom? She's out and about doing what she's got to do. And my sister is doing what she's got to do. So TV was my parent. Very much so. So you grow up with that story, seeing storytelling. And I remember I had this incredible canny ability to recognize actors from one thing to another thing that were not well-known actors. I would just see them and instantaneously I would know they were in this show or that show. So my whole life lived around, the programming of television. And then I played with my action figures. So I would do my storytelling with the action figures and it was a very serious business, very serious. I would set the stage. I would spend half the day making the set and doing the story and the other half letting the story unfold. And it was always very dramatic. And there was love stories, cause you had the few female characters. And then of course there was always the favorite male character. He's the star and they always had this romance and then there was someone that tried to come in and kill them and they would fight. And so I would if I watched a movie Road Warrior, Mel Gibson, then all of a sudden all of my characters were taken and molded into those kind of movie characters. So I would take tissue paper and scotch tape and tissue paper and masking tape, and I would make these little armor. It was just crazy. So in a way it's a kind of a progression. My father was a military person, so I thought I was going to go in the military. And then I realized, well, as an actor, I could play someone in the military, but I've yet to do that.
Without all that military.
Right.
Without all the military. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, tell us about Austin Peck and his high school era. So you were on the football team as a linebacker, but ultimately left school to pursue acting. So how did that all go down?
Yeah, I was big into athletics. I wrestled and I didn't go there very far with that. And then I said, there's some regrets. I have a handful of those people that live, have you seen that tattoo that says no regrets?
Yes.
it's such a great tattoo. I don't have any, but if I were to get a tattoo, I would like to be able to say that I had no regrets. But I do. I think I have some regrets. And one of them was not pursuing my athletic career a little bit more. Cause I was good, whatever I physically put my mind to, my body to. But I was wrestling and then I was playing football but then I got approached on the street by some agents. And I had around that time, I had people saying, hey, you should try this out. You should get into She's getting into modeling, she's getting into acting. It was like, okay, you know, it's Hollywood, it's LA. I was living in Santa Monica at the time. And my mom, you know, my stepfather was an agent, and it was like, but it didn't have anything to do with them. And these people came up to me and said, hey, you want to do this? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And they were legit. It's coast to coast. An agency that's still around today. And the first audition I went out on, I got. And that was a Kellogg's Pop-Tart commercial.
Yeah.
It's very cringy. But when you're like, I did it when I was 16, starting from when I was six, I really always thought that my career started at 16. But in reality, my sister went down a long list of things that I did, like shorts. I was in a movie my mom was in called Retribution. I did print ads that I had done since I was 6 years old. And I was very surprised. I was the youngest person to ever do this one acting class called The Mastery. It was a super highly intensive acting class. And I was the youngest person to ever do it. So I was pretty involved throughout my childhood. And then, fast forward to doing the Pop-Tarts commercial, and I'm thinking about going to the military, but then you get these residual checks. You're going, oh, well, yeah, I mean, this is the way it's going to be. And, you know, of course, it doesn't really work like that. I mean, maybe for some, but it didn't work for me. I just kind of gave up on my athletic career. And in some ways, I think there was a mistake in that. Yeah.
So it seems like when you were starting out your acting career, you were simultaneously finding some good footing as a model, because you have some pretty neat things on your resume on the modeling front, like things that sound very glamorous to me, like modeling for Valentino in Europe. Can we get some highs and lows of your life as a model?
I think when I first started in the industry, and like from the Pop-Tart commercial work at Coast to Coast, it was a fantastic agency. And the feedback I was getting was extremely positive. And I knew for me that I knew 6 months to a year that I was going to book something that was going to be significant in my career, would have really taken off, and then it would just been gone. That would have been the worst thing for me ever, right? I think that would have deeply harmed me. And I don't even know if I would be here, considering where I was at as a person and the people that were in my life. And so I had this guy that befriended me who was not a good character that said, hey, I'll be your manager. And we went to more of a modeling agency called Nina Blanchard, which was very big at the time. And then I was like, all right. I was like, I don't care. It's fine. And then I went to Europe when I graduated high school. And that's when my modeling, so it took me away from Hollywood, because I wasn't sold out. To me, it was like, okay, modeling, acting. I was like just so dumb. I didn't know. I mean, so like, I didn't know exactly what was up and what was, you know, down. And I found myself at 18 in Paris trying to make it, you know, in that world. And it's very different because every guy is beautiful and some far more than others. And, you know, where you're, you know, like I'm straight, but when you're like some guy walks in, you're like, dude, that guy is really attractive. You know what I mean? Like, holy cannolis, you know, that guy's really good looking. It's very humbling. So working in the industry and working in Paris, in Europe, the fashion industry in the modeling industry is actually it's a respected profession, believe it or not. And whereas in LA, as in the States, respected? No, you know, it's more of like a joke, but it's not a joke there. And so just having to navigate that world where it's not there, you're dealing with what is your talent? And I had a very difficult time adjusting to my personality, to the framework of the fashion profession, you know, modeling profession, all the stereotypes of like Zoolander to me is an hysterical movie, and it literally has probably about one to 5 ounces of truth to it that they've exaggerated on a tremendous scale. But it was very humbling trying to make it in that industry because, like, I'll tell you a story. So I would go to these castings where you would meet photographers or stylists or art directors for, could be Macy's or Bloomingdale's or Calvin Klein or whatever, right? And I would walk in, show them my book, and maybe they're in a high-rise apartment. I mean, like a apartment or, office. Like, oh, wow, this is a really beautiful view. Oh, I did that with Aldo Fly. That was in Rome, you know. Oh, and I did this. Oh, and it's just, you know, Bruce Weber. We were in Montana. And I'm like, you know, and it was for British Vogue. And also I'm talking. And then, okay, hey, great. Have a good day. You know what I mean? Like, just real like, hey, and I wouldn't get the responses that I felt were should be appropriate. But it took years for me to figure this out. So, and it was overnight where I would, this kind of goes to show you what the industry is like. And there's a lot of similarity to acting, but acting is much more based in personality. So I would go in and I would hand them my book, stand off like a feet away, be like, hi, how you doing? Nice to meet you. And I would say anything. I would just stand there. They'd flip through the book. I'd be quiet, just like not even looking at them. They'd be done, grab my book, say, thank you, have a nice day. And like, we love him. Put him on the veil. Oh, it's great. It's amazing. I mean, I just love him. It's great. I literally had the idea. As soon as I had an idea, the next casting I put into prop and put it into effect and literally had a completely different response. And it was, I was just like, it's so dumb. Like, I'm not different. You know, and what I would do is because I love to draw, I would show up on a set and I would just doodle, I would draw. So I became the guy that drew all the time. And that kept me from being too gregarious and too out there with my personality because my energy level, as high as it is now, was, I mean, Stephanie, you guys, I mean, come on. When you just like, I'm a total dork. I mean, it's just, come on. I mean, and in the fashion industry, that's so not cool. And so people would come to me and they would be interested in what I was doing because I was focused on something with my headphones on. And then I would show them my drawings and then I could meet people and more of like my world without giving too much of myself up. And it was my safe space, right? You know, it was my like, you know, I'm not safe out here because I know how you are. I'm safe. This is where I'm safe. And then I'll take care of you if you're here, I'll take care of you. I'll be cool. You know, like I'll be cool with you. Like, you know, doing all the PAs and for the personal appearances that you get on soaps, I always really enjoyed it because people gave me tremendous power to kind of make or break their moment. And that moment could have been short or long, you know? And I thought that was a really amazing thing to always take care of those people in the moment. And that's what I was doing, you know, with the art, and it made a big difference. Mm-hmm. I've been talking a long time.
Well, I will say this regarding your art. I have had the privilege of seeing it. You are so unbelievably talented.
I'm okay. I'm okay.
No, stop it. Okay. I'll say it. You don't have to say anything.
Okay. No. I'm a dude here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Keep telling yourself that. Okay. Now, your life changed in a big way, I think it's safe to say, in 1995 when you landed the role of Austin Reed on Days of Our Lives. So tell us your day's casting story.
Oh, yeah. That was great. So I think it was 6 months beforehand, I screen tested for All My Children with Kelly Ripa. And I think it was for Mark's part. I think so. I'm not sure. The only thing I remember about that audition, I remember there was a couch and I was standing behind it. So I remember, I think, yeah. I remember how tiny Kelly was, just teeny. I remember it being over and what the hell just happened? And her complimenting on my hair, number one, I think in the beginning, or, and then afterwards, her looking up at me and going, good job, right? That's what I remember. But Judy Bly Wilson, who is just one of the sweetest people, she called me in. I didn't get it, obviously. She called me in. She did not have to do this. And because I didn't have a theatrical agent, I just had a print and commercial. And I wanted to get back into it and, you know, live in New York City. And there's my dogs. And I wanted to get, so she called me in and said, hey, you should really pursue this. It was very kind of her. She didn't have to do that,
right?
You know? And then I think 6 months later, I got the audition for, I was like, Austin Reed. I'm like, if I don't get this part, like, are you serious? I didn't meet another Austin until I was like 18 years old. It was a far more common name now, but not back then. I never met an Austin. I have a funny story about the naming of Austin Reed too. So yeah, so I went, I did it, and I watched General Hospital one summer with the whole Luke and Laura storyline. So I had some familiarity with that. So I was like, okay, I think this is going to be an important moment to kind of like hit this. And so I did, and then I got the call back, and then I got screen tests. And I flew out to LA, and I remember I flew to LA, right? And I you have to understand, as a model, you're on the plane all the time, right? All the time. You are flying everywhere all the time. So being on a plane was not a big deal, except I was so in like completely different world that I forgot my luggage. I literally left my apartment in downtown and in the East Village and got to LA to realize, wait a second, I don't have any clothes. Like I didn't bring anything with me. What the fuck? Like, how do I not have my, so that goes to show where my head was, and which is great. And then I took this as an omen. I went to the mall in Burbank to get, I think something like underwear or something. and I come out, and I saw Ron Moss. Because how do you not recognize Ron Moss? Ron Moss is one of those guys like, man, that's a really good looking guy. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't age, right? That's a really good looking guy. And I remember like seeing him and him looking and seeing me, right? And I'm like, that's a sign. I'm like, that's a sign. That's a sign. So, and then also during that trip, my stepfather, my ex-stepfather, you know, LA, my mom was married four times. We went to a luncheon of all these Hollywood suit guys. And of course I'm just dressed in like a jeans button up and jeans and boots. And the only one who dressed similar to me was Mel Gibson. And he was across the room and he was there for Braveheart.
Wow.
And there's another regret do over that I didn't walk over to him and just say, like, you're Mad Max, like, you're Mel Gibson, like, you're a Lethal Weapon. You know what I mean? Like, I know he saw me. He'd probably think, oh, here's the next hot thing coming up, right? And, but, you know, it goes to show you how your ego can always get in the way. I didn't introduce myself. I regret that. So we're on the set for days, and I meet Christy Clark. She's wearing overalls. You know, Christy Clark with dresses when she's not Carrie, completely different person. And she's wearing overalls and she's got her glasses on and she's just, you know, laid back Christy self. And I'm like, this girl's cute. And I'm like, this girl's really cute. And personable, you know, just laid back. And they lined us, Herb Stein, my favorite director on Days, lined us up and gave us a speech. The only thing I remember very clearly, he said, auditions have been won and lost on a kiss. And I went, done. I was like, I don't need to think of anything else but that, right? I was like, that, right? That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put everything in that. And then I sat down. I remember the scene was over, the kiss, whatever. And Christy slipped me the tongue. And that was her. And you know what? She admit it. She liked she enjoyed every moment of all those guys. And she would tell you. So I'm not throwing her under the bus or anything. And we sat down on the couch where she asked questions, but immediately we just shared this, like, just laugh. We just started laughing. And there was a connection there. I didn't really know how much I knew. It was like, I was thinking, I want her to want me to be this guy. And I didn't know how significant that actually is. But that was my focus.
Well, you stepped into the like hottest triangle in soaps at that time, essentially, which was the Austin, Carrie, Sammy triangle, with which Lucas, of course, Brian Matillo's Lucas, was also heavily in the mix of.
The quadrangle.
So what stands out to you when you think about that, you know, era of time where you were working so closely with Christy, with Brian, and of course, with Allison Sweeney as Sammy?
Survival. I mean, as an actor at that time, I didn't have tech. All I had were instincts. I didn't have technique. I think there's other people that went to bat for me very much, like Christy and Charles Riley, who was PR, head of PR at that moment for the daytime and for NBC. Mm-hmm. So I was surviving. I remember when I was introduced and I was in the towel. I was shirtless a lot, and it was Phil Sogard, and I had to come out of the bathroom, and we were in Hollywood looking for Sammy in Hollywood, right? Looking for Sammy, and we were in a hotel, a seedy hotel room, and Carrie's having a nightmare. God, I can't believe I remember this. Carrie's having a nightmare, and so I'm in the shower, and I come out, and it's like, you know, Austin Reed will now be played by Austin Peck. And I come out, and he's like, okay, so when you come out? So the bed is literally right here. There's a wall right here. So you come out, and you're like, where's Carrie? Right? I'm like, she's right there. Right? She's right there. Yeah, but what we need is, you know, is like, instead of just trying to justify something that this was not justifiable, just like, listen, we need a stop moment because we're going to introduce you there. Like, oh, I'm like, oh, that makes sense. But instead, trying to justify something is, I mean, why would I be looking at, there's a wall right here. She's right there. Right? It's like, it doesn't make any sense to me. So not having the ability to like emotionally navigate that nonsense, because right, you have to be political. You have to fight your battles, know what are worthy and what are just not. And that's something that obviously Christy Clark knew in spades, and I did not at all. Right. So it was very, very, very hard and extremely challenging to come in and have to fill in the shoes of the character after someone as popular as Patrick Muldoon. And I just kept hearing about how popular Patrick Muldoon was and how hot Patrick Muldoon was. And it was like, oh, shut up, man. It was like, you know, but it was, I was like, it was an uphill battle.
Right. But in retrospect, you were the one that played out, you know, the meat of that triangle, and the soap opera digest covers that you did, the many of them prove it, you know, you really got in the thick of it. Now, Lauren Coslow joined Days as Austin's mother, Kate, in 1996, and she has described you as her first friend in the cast, as someone who was so sweet and supportive from day one. So what comes to mind for you when you think about working with Lauren?
Oh, well, I mean, Lauren Coslow is just one of my, we hit it off immediately. I think there's obviously a necessity to that because she'd play my mother. But I think just on a personal level, we just hit it off, and it just enjoyed acting together and enjoyed the part. And of course, I always was like, I'm your favorite son. All right. This, you know, it's just like, hands down, I'm your favorite son. We had a lot of fun. We just had a lot of fun with the scenes. How can we make this a little more interesting and playful and very playful? Our characters were very, very, very playful with each other. And I think it came across. Yeah, Lauren to me, she's one of my favorite people on earth. She's fantastic. She was, you know, she came in like, I think months after I came on. So it wasn't like, it was definitely within the year, like 6 months or something like that, maybe less.
Well, something I want to know about is that in 1997, you and Christy took home the Soap Opera Digest Award for Hottest Romance, but you actually co-hosted the ceremony with Lisa Gibbons and Shamar Moore and Ingo Rademacher. I don't know that we've ever had a Soap Opera Digest Award co-host on the podcast before.
We have not.
What, if anything, do you remember about that night?
Embarrassment. Deep, deep embarrassment. Yeah. So far, this is the third regret.
Okay. For those counting at home.
Hold on. The third regret is not hosting or winning, but it's two things. Like, I have a very particular sense of humor that my wife is constantly telling me that not everybody gets your sense of humor. But I just think it's funny, right? So I just think something's funny. I just go for it. And sometimes you land flat. And so when I came out with Lisa Gibbons, I had this shtick that I was going to do, which was walk out. And I committed to it, but nobody got it at all. So I walk out all like super suave, right? Like just, you know, like super suave. And then I stumble, you know what I mean? Because it was a little ramp, you know, it was tight. And I was like, I stumble and then I slid down. And I didn't know that my white tie, the black suit, was popping, that popped out of my jacket, was there the whole time, that was buttoned. So nobody laughed and nobody got it. Like, that is embarrassing as hell, because everyone thought probably that I was being cool and stumbled and was trying to recover. So the joke was on me, even though it was like, I did that on purpose, right? I was like, that was on purpose. It was really making fun of myself, although I truly did make fun of myself, where everybody wasn't laughing, but felt like embarrassed, which is the worst, right? That's like the worst thing. So just to get that straight, if there is anybody out there that remembers that, which I don't think anybody does, that's what happened. But I remember that. And I remember just, oh, that was just bad.
Well, you still went home a winner.
And the second thing during that night is that, I mean, because Soap Opera Digest, Days won every single category. It's just like, it was just a given. It was just, I think I stood up before they even announced it. It was like, and for the best romance, is like, and I was just like, I was like, it's really arrogant, but I was like, Days wins every category.
They had a lot of passionate purchasers.
No feigning of humility at all. It was straight up, we're winning, period, done. Hottest romance, there you go.
Well, you weren't wrong.
Yes.
But it made me look like an asshole, right? Just an arrogant asshole.
I'm sure no one noticed but you.
I'm sure they did. It was like mental note. He's an asshole.
No. But you did have an amazing run that first part of Salem. Again, as I said, multiple Soap Opera Digest covers, like hot front burner storylines. But in 2002, you left the show. It was not your decision. So looking back, how did you feel about that?
That's a great question. That really is. I'm a slow learner, right? I really am. When I do get something, like I really get it. Like I get it in a cellular level once I get something, and I can understand it from every angle. One of them I really didn't understand is how political, absolutely political, working on a show is. There's so much politics. If I were to go back and how I would have maneuvered things, or at least paid attention to certain things that were very, very important. You know what I would have done? I would have entertained and really cultivated the relationship of Austin and Sammy far more than Austin and Carrie. And then you'd always would have that thing. But I was so kind of like, no, it's Austin and Carrie. That makes sense. It's Austin and Carrie. That makes sense. Of course, it does make sense. But I would have cultivated the Austin-Sammy thing far more. I would have entertained it far more. I think the hard thing is because when I came on, Allie was so young. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She was so young. I mean, when Allie was, you know, Allie is one of the savviest people you'll ever meet. She wasn't just 16. She was a very young 16. You know, you can meet old 16s and young 16s. She was a very young 16. And that's a lot of good because there was she was very childlike, very child, you know, there was an aspect. And here I am, a man in my mid-20s, you know. So I would have played with that more. I would have cultivated that more. I would have entertained that a lot more. And I think that's what ended up becoming a downfall, along with other things that some information that I'm aware of certain people that kind of little stabbing the back. So I would have been a little bit more aware of the political environment that wouldn't have led me to, I think that would not have led me to being off the show in 2002. I was not devastated at all. I was surprised. I actually would have been more accepting if they replaced me with another actor. I was surprised that the replacement, the getting rid of Austin. It's like, that's a pretty central character. And because it was a pain in the ass. I mean, one time I threatened the entire crew to a fight. I mean, come on. So, I mean, I was a pain in the ass. And I think over years, I became less of a pain in the ass. But I understood that. Mm-hmm. Like, I did. I understood that. But it was tough. I looked at it like, in a sense, like providence that it was meant to be. And then, because I wanted to do other things. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do movies. I wanted, you know, what actor does want to become a movie star?
Right.
And to explore other parts. Playing Austin Reed, to be honest, was the hardest character I've ever played. By far, the most difficult character I've ever played. The only other character I played that was equally hard because I hated the set was Mystery Woman 3 on Hallmark. Freaking hated that. I hated everybody on that set. And they felt the same way about me. So there you go. And I think that's probably why I've never worked for Hallmark since then, to be honest. It was just like... I went and I did romantic comedy. I started in that, and I did a lot of theater, did a lot of guest stars. And, mm-hmm. you know, it was, I thought it's just the time, you know, I didn't sweat it. Mm-hmm. I didn't sweat it at all.
Great. What was it like to get the call to return to Days?
Well, I maneuvered that with a couple of people. Because here I got a kid, married, I got a kid, and I got to work. I was like, well, why not get back on Days? So we just, with a couple other people, Lauren was one of them. We just, I played the game. I just played the game and planted some seeds. It was one between me, my manager, Michael Bruno, and Lauren Coslow. We absolutely finagled that. Mm-hmm. And it was a great opportunity because I came on the show and I felt like I had that opportunity of undoing a lot of what I felt was petulant, unprofessional behavior. Mm-hmm. And so I was just dead set on coming to work, you know, 1,000% and committing and doing. And I think that in many ways I did do that. I did make that happen, you know. And then, you know, what happened with that?
Right. Well, that lasted a year, which saw Austin and Carrie reunite and marry and go off into the sunset of Switzerland. But yeah. Not long after the show decided to write out the characters, you landed on As the World Turns to play Brad Snyder. So how did that come about?
Well, that was another thing. So what I did was before I got on Days, I decided to go to New York and meet all the just everybody in New York. But when I met Frank Valentini, he was doing One Life. I thought he was one of the actors. So he came in, I thought he was just an actor walking by the office. So when he came in, I was like, hey, and I was like, this guy's got to be an actor on the show. He's like way too good looking, right? I mean, you know, he's an actor, right? And it was Frank. So we hit it off really well. And then I met Mary Clay Bolin for As Will Turn. So I didn't meet Chris Gauman, who I love, by the way. I love Chris. And Mary Clay, we hit it off. We just had a great conversation. And I just told him, hey, I'm in New York City. And I figure while I'm here, I just want to meet everybody. And so I did. And then after days call, it was immediately we got on the horn and found out what was going on in New York City. And it was the character of Brad Snyder. So I came out and I auditioned. I screen tested with Terry. And, you know, I knew the gig, you know. And I remember Christy Clark telling me, oh, they had a mutual friend named Jamie Dudney, who I've never met. So I was like, oh, yeah, Jamie's my friend. So when I was like, I brought her name up just to give that little, I was playing the game. You know, it's a game. So, and I remember exactly where I met Terry and, you know, and she was very sweet doing that audition. And I remember the part of Brad, I was like, oh, there's a trap in this character. I was like, this guy's funny. This guy's funny. I love the scene that they gave us because he's being a total dick, right? But he's being funny. Like he's kind of like, I'm joking with you. Are you going to get it? Are you going to take me serious? Or are you going to play with me? Are you going to play with me? I'm flirting with you. I'm playing with you. Like, God, you know, don't be so serious kind of thing. And so I knew that there were some traps there that a lot of people were going to fall into. And I was the only one that didn't, according to Terry. And I said, well, I'll get her on. And I knew enough now, get her to choose me. So that's what I focused on. I was getting her to choose me. And that's chemistry, because if you're going to have, you have to have chemistry. I think also coming from a show like Days of Our Lives has a high TVQ, right? So it's a high profile show. The New York show, like As Will Turns at the time, didn't have the production value, the TVQ that didn't have that. It'd been on for a long time. It just wasn't at, just didn't have that PR thing that Days does. So I was coming from a lot of what Days gave me just by being on the show. So and knowing full well with that, that gave me a leg up over everybody.
You know? Talked about how each show has its own specific vibe. What was the vibe backstage at As the World Turns versus Days?
I mean, I got to tell you, as an actor, I love playing Brad Snyder. Like Brad Snyder is me, right? It's just, that's me, right? But me. And Rick Powers on One Life to Live. I freaking love playing that character. That was the best character. But my mom and I bonded a lot over Brad Snyder because she would watch and she would see I would get to do all these fun things and be playful. I got to use a lot of my personality and the parts they started writing for that. But behind the scenes, I think there's a big difference because it's outside Hollywood. So Hollywood itself breeds a kind of mentality. It breeds a kind of neuroses that exacerbates the already neurotic nature of actors because you have the, you know, everybody, it's, well, Hollywood really is just a big conglomerate high school. That's what it is. It's a big high school. And so there's that aspect. Whereas in working on As the World Turns, there was much more of a community and cohesiveness. There wasn't this separation between like you have actors, you have hair and makeup, actors, directors, producers. Wherein on Days, it's sectarian. Without a doubt, it was incredibly sectarian. And on As the World Turns, it was very cohesive, where people were kind of just, they did the work, and a lot of them came from theater. So the theater aspect and that acting, they all, they, they understood the power of comedy, the power of playing things against the grain. Whereas in many ways, Days was much more like hit the line. This is the drama. We're being dramatic here. Drama, man. And whereas in, you know, you can play the opposite. And there was that just understood. A lot of that had to do with New York theater. And we were way out in the middle of Nowhereville, Midwood, Brooklyn. That's it. There's nowhere to go. You're out in Brooklyn. Where are you going? Like, you're not going anywhere. You're here. And I think that those combination of things really had a lot to do with it.
Your main love interest on the show, obviously, was the lovely Terry Kahn, a.k.a. Mrs. Austin Peck in real life. What are your favorite memories of working with her on that show?
Oh, every moment. I love working with Terry. I mean, working with her was just the funniest thing I've ever done. Literally, I would come to work and I would say to her, "Good morning, sunshine." And it was just like, it was because every time I saw her, it was like the sunshine. And we would, she was in this low point of playing Katie. She had been on for a while. I think it was like 9 years or something like that, 10 years. And so she was this kind of like, you know, and then I came in and I was so excited about playing Brad because I was like, oh, look what I get to say tomorrow. Look what I get to do. I was like so excited. So that energy, I think, is something that was refreshing to her. And so we played. And then working with Trent and Eva, and I mean, they were all so amazing. Just so amazing. And all the actors, but Terry and I would, you know, run our lines, but we would go, we'll get coffee. And there was one point that we just literally, we started dressing the same. And we'd follow each other around, like, you know, like puppies, you know, like one day I would be the puppy and another day she would be the puppy. And I really enjoyed it because she understands comedy and so do I. And so we put that in as much as possible. And that just, it was so much fun. Mm-hmm. It was fun.
Well, sadly, Brad had a very tragic demise in 2009 and the show went off the air the following year. And in time, both you and Terry ended up on One Life to Live. She as Aubrey, you as adult filmmaker Rick. So how did you guys moving to Landview come about?
Well, Terry, One Life to Live, that came pretty quickly after the end of As the World Turns because I was off first. It was really hard letting go of Brad. That was very hard for me, but it was softened by Rick Powers. I get a call from my agent and say, yeah, so Terry's already on playing Aubrey, which was great. You know, very similar, but very different characters. And he goes, yeah, but it's a porn producer. And I'm like, oh, I could have fun with that. I could have fun with that. Because most actors will, you know, like, again, like knowing the medium and knowing most actors, they'll just look at that. And the first thing they'll think about is slimy and sleazy. And I'm like, no. That's like a dead end. You can't do anything with that. And there's nothing redemptive. I was like, I know that one thing about soaps is if you're on and you're good and they see it and it's fun and they like working with you, they'll like find a way to redeem you. So it's like, okay, that's what I want to do. And they're like, well, it's only like maybe 6 episodes. I said, I'm going to turn it into more. And so it turned into 10 months of work. And it was like only a few months afterwards, or I don't know how much it went off the air. I think they would have redeemed the character. And I think my whole goal was to put Rick and Aubrey together and make them a team. That was the goal. And I that might have not just been mine either. And so when I got the character, I said, oh, this guy's funny. This guy is funny. And I thought, he's an opportunist. He's not a porn producer. He's an opportunist. And he just happens to be doing this now until something else comes along. And lo and behold, became a music producer.
A tale as old as time. So that year, 2011, was also a big year for you and Terry. Personally, you tied the knot. You recently celebrated 12 your 12th anniversary. And in addition to your sons, Aiden and Roman, and your stepdaughter, Julia, you and Terry have two daughters, Karen and Morgan. So give us a snapshot of how the family's doing.
Well, we live outside Philadelphia, and we have this beautiful property. We moved here in October, and my in-laws moved. They sold because they lived in Albuquerque, and so they moved here. And now there's basically two houses, a small house and a bigger house, kind of connected together. And so it's going very, very well. It's going very well. We're, you know, we were, you know, like schooling for the kids was really, we did the homeschooling thing for a little bit. And I was doing a lot of that. I'm not very good at it. May hats off to all you homeschool moms and or dads. You know, that's tough. We were doing a homeschool co-op. We have all these families that go and meet like twice a week. So I started teaching boxing and drama, and we would do these little plays, and I would be the most, there would be other dads there, but mainly I was like the dad there. And, some of these kids, they need to be wrangled in and they're not used to it. So here I am as the thespian trying to teach them, okay, we're going to be doing Shakespeare here. But what we did, what was great, one of the moms, she's very, very artistic, Dorian Kozak. She rewrote Julius Caesar to the backdrop of Star Wars. It's like, that's awesome. So I said, okay, I'm going to do this. It's going to be so much fun. And here I am trying to get these homeschool kids to focus on doing Shakespeare. Why I'm running a scene here and in the same room, there's like paper airplanes. Like, okay, so I'm like, sit down. Like, okay, oh gosh. Okay, so I'm being nice. I'm being very nice and starting off being nice. And I'm like, guys, come on. I know this is hard. Go over there. And I would bring them in for like a minute, and I would get back to doing it because, of course, they have nothing to do, but they can't be running around the hall. They can't be running around everywhere. So finally, I was getting so frustrated as like the fourth time, like, stop, stop, stop. And all the other moms are kind of like, they're doing their things. And some of them are in the hallway and they're chatting and hanging out because they're like, oh, he's doing his thing. And a paper airplane lands right in front of me. And I have these big boots on. And I was like, stomp on the dirt, just like lost it. Next thing, the moms are like rushing in, like, he's killing our kids. He's killing our kids. But they all understood. They were kind of like, we like having Austin there. He adds a scary element.
You bring your actor temperament to, to the party.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, it turned out to be a really good performance of Julius Caesar, man. I'm telling you.
Hey, you might.
We had lightsaber fights and the whole thing. It was awesome.
But they loved it. But you've also gotten the chance to appear again on the small screen in 2017. You popped into Days to Visit as Austin in 2019. You were featured in the series on the Days app, which is Chad and Abby in Paris. And in 2020,
I really liked that. Yeah.
That was great. I love that. Now in 2021, you reprised Austin again, this time on the streaming spinoff Days of Our Lives Beyond Salem. So, you know, what has it meant to you that the show has written Austin back in, you know, every so often?
Well, it's been amazing to be able to go back and reprise the role that you, I mean, you're mid-20s. I mean, especially, I guess, in modern times, it's very formative years. And to, you know, go back and see some of the same people and play the same character and to see, like, well, how have I grown? What more can I bring to this character that I did years ago? I mean, I think soaps, there's some other mediums nowadays, but where you're really experiencing the character, you grow as the character grows. So it's really, there's two simultaneous things happening at the same time. It's always been fun. Always been a challenge, deep challenge. Acting is something I love to do in any capacity. It's just fun. That's why I do it.
Would you go back again?
Well, yeah, if they call me. Mm-hmm. Would I go back again? I mean, sure. I mean, unless I have something else going on.
Okay.
You know?
Well, when you look back on, you know, the totality of your acting career and it's your personal life as well, you know, both very enmeshed in your experiences in daytime, can you put into words how you feel like your life's changed when you became a member of the soap community in 1995?
Well, I never intended to do. I think it's like when I meet young actors, my son, Roman, who's 18, he's an actor. He's done 3 shorts. You know, he's an actor. He's doing it. I have a lot of advice to give him that he's not very interested in. But I think it's common, I guess. I would like to be a little bit more of a guiding force for him. But I think it's a common thing when you're young, you approach acting from a concept of wanting to be what you see in it and inspires you, which is obviously these bigger than life characters. And then life has a way of happening. Either one, that may happen. The percentages of people that happens with is insignificant to the amount of people that try. I mean, if you are an actor and you could pay your bills, you're like in the top 1% of 1% out of like thousands and thousands of people. So in that way, you're a success. Being on daytime is kind of like being like you're in the family, you know, you're working, to go from being a non-working actor to being a working actor and on a soap or anything. It's kind of like you get adopted, like you're in the family, except being on a soap, you're kind of like redheaded stepchild famous. You're like, you know, you're always delegated to the kiddie table during Thanksgiving. And it never seems to get the kind of respect artistically that I think it, in many ways, it deserves. Oh, yeah, so this is really hard. It's really hardworking actors. But, you know, there's a lot more to it. Like when James Franco honestly came on GH, hey, man, James will tell you, you weren't that special. Right? You weren't, you know? I mean, I think he's a phenomenal actor. That is without a doubt. But when he was on GH, he was average. And that's a fact. And you can take that and you can cash it in the bank. And I'd say that to his face. And he probably wouldn't care. But that goes to show you that it's a very tough medium, incredibly tough medium. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that shot on video, time frame by which we're given. I mean, one day, you guys, I did 5 episodes and part of 2 episodes. 5 episodes in one day. Are you out of your mind? That's insane.
No one would ever understand unless they actually did it. And I think that that's why there's such a sad, negative, you know, sort of perception of what daytime actors do. And in fact, they are the hardest working actors for the volume. And what you actually produce is unbelievable.
It's cold reading, you know? I mean, it's like, you're not, and there's some actors that make it look so easy, but in a way you get used to it. You know, I think in some ways I've made it look easy. But there is, you know, having to have certain levels of emotional depth and having to, you know, all the technical stuff. And there was so much more. When I got on days, you know, I just wanted to do my 3 years, save my money and go become a big, big movie star. And then, you know, that didn't happen. You know, that didn't happen. And that's fine. When I look back at it, I don't regret anything. It's offered me and giving me far more than I can possibly imagine. I met my wife. I have 2 children that would never even be here. I have amazing in-laws. I wouldn't know. I mean, you know, it's, you know, hindsight is 20/20. That's why I would say with young people, don't be a snob. Be a snob. Snob is like, this is more unattractive than snobbery. The difference between being honest about something like how you feel about a certain person or something, or how you feel about your work that you feel like is true. That's just being, that's being honest. It's being truthful. That's humble, because you're just being truthful about what you believe to be so. It may not be so, but that's what you believe. But, you know, being humble is, humility is truth, being truthful. And that means, you know, if someone goes, hey, I don't want to do this because I want to do that. Like, okay, are you willing to pay the price? Because you're not willing. Well, I don't want to do soap because, you know, I want to be a big film star. I've heard that. You have any idea how many times I've heard that? And then, like, I see that person a year later and they're taking my order. And I'm like, how's it working out for you? And they're like, yeah, man, how's the soap going? How's the soap going? Is it good? I'm like, yeah, if you had auditioned for it back then, instead of being just an a-hole, you would be having someone else take your order, you know? But I'm an artist. Shut up. You kidding me? Do you have any idea how much art it takes to be an actor on a soap where you sometimes do 5 episodes in one day? Give me a break.
They don't.
The machine that it takes to produce this, day in and day out, week in, month out, year in, year, it's like, it's hardcore. Mm-hmm. And you can translate this into anything except give me a beautiful camera, give me great cinematography, and you see the performance and see how it changes, because it's not shot on video and it's set with the harsh lighting.
Right. Absolutely. And again, that's sort of something we all know, and mm-hmm. people would know it if more people were open to learning more about daytime, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, before we let you go, is there anything you'd like to say directly to the Days of Our Lives, As the World Turns, and or One Life to Live fans mm-hmm. who may be listening?
Well, for the few of you that still exist, you know, thank you so much for all of the love, for all of the support, for all of the endurance when it comes to being there day, week, month, year after year, right? You know, and because without viewers, there would be no show, right? There would be no show. There'd be nothing. Without the viewers, there would be nothing in reality. And so I'm very appreciative.
Well, we are so appreciative that you gave us all your time today and shared all your memories. And we look forward to speaking with you again or seeing you back on daytime. And please send our love to Terry.
I will. Thank you guys so much. This has been really fun. I hope it was fun for you.
Of course it was. And it was great to see you. Thanks, okay. Austin. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Austin Peck for being our guest. If you like this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.